PM board bombs.
All right, welcome back to EM Board Bombs. You're probably wondering where we've been. Company's still going strong. Don't you worry. We are not going anywhere. Conveniently, Dr. Hussein and I both had major events over the past couple weeks. Good major events. Don't worry. We're all alive and healthy. Hashtag blessed. But we both had places we had to be, and we are back and at it. The last time we were together, we covered spider bites. Well, we're covering another environmental complaint today. Kind of a cross between talks and environmental. Should be a lot of fun. Dr. Hussein, unfortunately, not joining us today. And don't worry, it's not because of the topic of this podcast today. We're covering a really interesting talks intersection with environmental, with really, you know, gosh, I hate to be claiming clickbait here, but this is a good type of clickbait. You probably saw the title. You're like, whoa, that's interesting. I'm going to listen to that one. And we're glad you did. So thanks for joining us. EM Board Bombs, we're the only podcast in the world that covers hashtag EM life as well as boards content for emergency medicine. If you're a medical student, if you're a season attending, resident, whatever, we have just the right stuff for you. Remember to check out our website, emboardbombs.com. We have handouts there, podcasts there. Everything's free, which is awesome. I'd like to give a shout out to our main only sponsor, the only one we like, Emergency Medicine News. You can check out their website, emnews.com. Has a lot of great articles, a lot of great content. I learn something every time I read their monthly journal release. More than one thing, of course, but a minimum of one thing. So let's dive into the stem here. We got a 50-year-old male working in a maintenance part of the hospital that you work at. He presents to the ED with complaint of sudden onset visual hallucinations and altered mental status. He is disoriented to time and place, but is cooperative with the examination. Vital signs are within normal limits. On further questioning, the patient reports recently purchasing and ingesting a variety of exotic mushrooms from a local farmer's market. Now, he states he was sick of the hospital cafeteria prices and decided to get healthy about his food choices and go full organic. He just sent it. He states organic food is so expensive, though, so he decided to lean into the mushroom foraging world. And he went to learn that aspect of foraging and picking out mushrooms. His pupils are dilated on arrival, and he appears quite agitated. Which of the following is the most appropriate next step in management? Choice A, administer IV benzodiazepine. Choice B, CT head. Choice C, consult toxicology. Choice D, administer IV haloperidol. All right, correct answer here is going to be choice A, administer IV benzodiazepines. All right, there is so much to say about this topic. Get it? Mushroom? Mush. A lot of great puns in this podcast, too. We're talking about shrooms, basically. Talking about mushrooms. And we are talking about a specific type of overdose that is very rare in the United States, thankfully, but is so classic on boards, and it's just a fun topic. Let's be honest here, and I don't want you to be spored out of your minds. I'm telling you, these topics that we got here, these little puns here, they're just going to be worn out by the end of this podcast. So hopefully you are chuckling on the way to work here. So save yourself the truffle. Set everything down you're doing. Give us a full listen here because you don't want to miss anything that we're talking about. Before we dive into things, we got to talk about EM Rapid Bombs. EM Rapid Bombs is our premium podcast. If you like the puns you're getting now, you're not going to get too many puns with EM Rapid Bombs. So EM Rapid Bombs is geared toward high-level listening. Essentially, what we do is 2 to 4 minute episodes. We give you multiple choice questions, just like the boards, break it down, what's wrong, what's right, what you need to know, give you coaching as well. And the coaching basically guides you through how the test is going to ask that question. And sometimes we delineate what you do in real life, of course. There's always a difference in the real life and the test, right? Sometimes. So check that out. You can go to emboardbombs.com. You can sign up immediately within like 2 clicks of going to our website. And it is very easy. Download it to your phone. So check it out. EM Rapid Bombs. It's our premium podcast. And you get special things when you're a premium subscriber, right? Get treated well by us. We take good care of you. Check it out. It's like ordering shroom service instead of room service. All right, so that's enough puns for now. Let's dive into this. About 1% to 2% of wild mushrooms are toxic. It's a very small amount. But don't take that literally. Don't go out and just start eating mushrooms. Now, over 1/2 of mushroom ingestions occur in, guess who? Yep, children. less than 6 years old. In most cases, pediatric exposures are the classic taste and see and then, you know, run and go cry. Basically, it's limited to a partial or single bite of a non-toxic or minimally toxic mushroom. Even if children have ingested the scary mushrooms, the ones we'll talk about in a few minutes, they typically do well because of how little they ingest. Now, the quote-unquote little brown mushrooms, I'm not kidding you, that's what they're called, are associated with benign toxicity. These are immediate symptoms of nausea and vomiting, sometimes diarrhea. But mushroom identification should only ever be done by a professional mycologist. Missed my calling here. Should have been a mycologist. Would have been called to the hospital for identification of mushrooms. Now, whenever the test mentions something about serious toxicity or mortality after a mushroom, it typically results from misidentified mushrooms. Essentially, foraging adults and others who share the meal will get this overdose. And it's basically a complete big fail. It's like those fail army videos on YouTube. If they can make one about failing on mushroom identification, this is a big one. Think of mushroom poisoning in terms of time to initial symptoms after ingestion. You've probably seen this on some board study websites or just your reading initially on mushroom toxicity for emergency medicine. You know, the new ABEM module, I think, for this year is covering mushroom toxicity. I'm totally kidding, by the way. The immediate symptoms within 6 hours usually indicate a benign poisoning. Delayed symptoms more than 6 hours include basically a life-threatening presentation. So on the test, this is the easiest way to identify if it's a benign presentation, they go home kind of question, or the multiple choice question wants you to admit the patient is the more than 6 hour and then symptoms start. Very, very important. Now there is some exceptions to this we'll get to in a second, but the most common immediate symptoms are the gastrointestinal ones. We mentioned this earlier with kids. Abdominal pain, vomiting, diarrhea, usually self-limited, goes away great, awesome. Manage it just like gastroenteritis. Now, there is one caveat to this whole delayed symptom thing, and it's to you fellows living up in the Northeast United States. Potentially life-threatening mushrooms could present initially with gastroenteritis, but this is very, very rare. You're never going to encounter this if you work anywhere else other than the Northeast United States. Even in the Northeast United States, let's be honest, I don't think you are seeing a lot of mushroom overdoses. If you are, please write to me. It always amazes me, actually, the shout-outs I get. I made a joke a few weeks ago about pneumocephalus and skull x-rays. Within 24 hours, I got an email about pneumocephalus and skull x-rays. So, you know, people are listening to this, so I guarantee I'm going to get an email from someone living in the Northeast saying, well, you know, one time I was taking care of a mushroom overdose, and it was presenting with gastroenteritis. Even though you said that was really rare and you'll never see it, I've seen it 5 times in my career working in rural Vermont. Good luck to you up there. Now, the most common symptoms associated with emergency department presentation after a quote-unquote magic mushroom consumption. This is not going to be the liver failure people. These are going to be the people that come in just like this question. Panic, anxiety, suspiciousness. Suspiciousness is literally a symptom listed in paranoia. The duration of symptoms is typically 4 to 12 hours. So you're going to be watching them for that time, maybe longer. And it's going to be supportive treatment, just like every environmental tox case, right? You are giving pretty much any patient in the entire world with some type of overdose benzodiazepines, unless it is a benzodiazepine overdose. You are giving benzodiazepines, and it's basically because they're clean drugs. Clean as in that they don't interact too much with other toxicologic cases, and they have great effect for, one, anti-seizure, and also just a clean form of anxiolysis as well as sedation. We try to stay away from antipsychotics in patients with toxicologic presentations. That's why choice D was wrong. Haloperidol was not the right choice here. So let's dive into a little bit more about mushrooms. So there are 4 different like classifications here of weird mushroom presentations. A couple of them are very easy to remember. One of them you'll never be tested on. And the last one is downright scary. So one is just going to be cholinergic toxicity. And it's not so much important that you remember the mushroom that causes this, but just know that this is one of those classic environmental questions of cholinergic toxicity. This is like the sludge thing, right? Sludge meaning all the cholinergic symptoms, salivation, lacrimation, urination, diarrhea, GI cramping and movement, vomiting, all that jazz. Just think of everything turning on the faucet and you're leaking fluid out of everywhere. It's not just mushrooms that can cause this, so that's why they're not going to test that. It's not a uniquely mushroom thing. But just know when you have those cases, you're going to be giving the antidote, which is atropine, glycopyrrolate, as well as benzodiazepines, again, for agitation control. The one you don't need to know about, I'm just going to literally mention, is the disulfiram-like reaction, which is weird from a mushroom. Again, don't worry about it. You're not going to be tested on that. Just forget about it. The disulfiram-like reaction is really just, I don't think, going to be tested on. Please email me if you disagree. I'd love to hear your thoughts. So we're not going to go over that. So what we are going to cover is the gyromitrum, which is such a weird mushroom overdose. It causes a variety of just classic things. Probably the two most classic ones that come out, seizures, and I'm not kidding you when I say this, methemoglobinemia. So you know the antidotes to those, right? So of course, if you have gyromitrum and seizures, you can try benzodiazepines, but the current toxicology resources state to give pyridoxine. Really fascinating here. Remember what else we give pyridoxine for, right? I'll let you think on that for a second. I'll tell you at the end of the podcast before we end. Methemoglobinemia, of course, that may benefit from the administration of methylene blue, classically. The hallucinogenic mushrooms, these are appropriately all beginning with the first three letters, PSI, PSI, so psychiatric, easy to remember. And these are those magic mushrooms I mentioned earlier. This is the classic. You're going to watch this patient, take care of them in the ED, essentially just like any other drug overdose, and they usually do quite well. The last group are the downright scary group. This is the amantia mushrooms. You probably heard that word, the amantia, the death cap mushrooms, like Amantia phalloides. There's another one, the Amantia bisporigeria, called the, I'm not even kidding you, this is the name of this mushroom, Destroying Angel. What a name! What an epic name. Anyway, that is absolutely the name of a future wrestler to join our ranks. That would, if you can imagine the opening night, Toxic Megacolon versus Destroying Angel. Wow, we could begin a medical WWE that would actually be quite popular, maybe educational. So, Destroying Angel, very scary stuff. These are going to be the liver failure mushrooms. Essentially, these patients will come in and they, right, have a delayed presentation. We talked about that, more than 6 hours, and then they'll go into literally fulminant liver failure. Extremely frightening. Anyway, the deadly white amantias, which are what I just mentioned, all those guys, the death cap, the Destroying Angel. There's last one, Verna, Amantia Verna, the fool's mushroom. Sorry. These mushrooms are so hilariously named. It's just whoever the mycologist was deserves a round of applause. You don't need to know the phases of clinical manifestations. You just have to know that on the test, and typically in real life, greater than 6 hours after mushroom consumption should increase your suspicion for some type of amatoxin-containing mushroom. So if someone comes in, they say, hey, I ingested a mushroom. Yeah, it was like, I don't know, 12 hours ago, and then they're throwing up. Ooh, not good, not good, not good. However, early onset of GI symptoms doesn't automatically exclude it in real life. Just makes it very, very unlikely. Now, typically the patients will start with epigastric abdominal pain, vomiting, severe cholera-like diarrhea. We covered cholera recently on our Rapid Bombs podcast. Check it out. And then, of course, elevation in liver enzymes, and then irreversible liver failure with renal failure. Anyway, these are scary, scary things, and the main aspect of care is supportive care. Now, the historical mortality rates, I'm not kidding you, were up to like 50%. My God. Now, they can reduce mortality down to 10% with just supportive care measures, and that includes, you know, fluid resuscitation, you know, addressing hypovolemic shock with basically reducing vomiting, diarrhea, replacing fluids, correcting electrolytes. Now, the crazy thing about charcoal in this type of overdose is that the usual time frame doesn't apply. This is one of the more fascinating things I learned about when reviewing this topic. And the elimination enhancement, essentially, when you do activated charcoal, you can do that every 4 hours for up to like 2 days. I'm not kidding you. This isn't like the, oh, you know, it was more than 6 hours ago, charcoal's worthless. Yeah, fulminant liver failure with no clear antidote, why not try activated charcoal if they can tolerate it? Now, in one critical review of 2,000 cases, that's pretty good. I know it's retrospective and observational, I'm sorry. Now, in those cases of like 2,000 cases of amatoxin-containing mushrooms, detoxification procedures, which would include activated charcoal, were associated with a mortality rate of 10% versus 47% of supportive care alone. So this is something to not laugh at. So think about activated charcoal in your patients with amatoxin mushroom poisoning. A lot of flack that charcoal gets, really shocking. I had a long discussion the other night with some team members about charcoal, and there was a lot of hate being thrown on charcoal. Hey, listen, I did a whole podcast on charcoal several months ago. Not at all buying stock in charcoal. Even though it's like a health craze now. Everybody like loves charcoal all of a sudden. But yes, it has its limitations. Yes, there's no randomized controlled trials, but you may want to consider that in certain cases. if you can, if the patient can tolerate it, if they are cooperative. Yes, it can cause nausea and vomiting. Don't intubate people just to give charcoal. All the above, I'm telling you. Just go listen to the podcast, please. I don't want to put my foot in my mouth and someone's going to email me with a question again. You want to start giving some weird things that you've probably never given before in the ED. So it gets into some weird stuff here when it comes to amatoxins in terms of antidotes, and I really don't think it's high yield. I just have to mention this because someone's going to ask, why haven't you mentioned this? So I have to mention it, or else we're going to lose subscribers. If you have amatoxin overdose and you're managing this, within 24 hours, you want to give the preferred antidote, which is literally the craziest name ever. If Iltifat were here, he would be, he couldn't even say this word. I don't think he could say this word, and IV silibinin dihemisuccinate. Super silly. So that is essentially IV milk thistle product of some type. And I am absolutely not covering anything further than that. That is the antidote for amatoxin mushroom toxicity. I wouldn't call it a pure antidote. It's just something you're going to give which has a favorable profile for recovery, potentially. It's recommended by systematic reviews, whatever. We're not getting into any details beyond that. Now, what about if you don't have that? Well, if you don't have that, then you got a backup plan, which everyone has, which is penicillin G. There's some evidence that it might inhibit amatoxin uptake and prevent cellular toxicity. Again, no more details than that. That is your backup option if you don't have silibinin dihemisuccinate. Whew, had to say it a second time just to prove I could say it. And that's really it when it comes to amatoxins. That's all I want to say about them. Now, N-acetylcysteine has gotten some attention here, as it always does. For any case of fulminant liver failure, you may want to consider N-acetylcysteine. It's pretty effective for hepatotoxicity. It's kind of one of those last-ditch efforts you're kind of throwing against the wall and hoping for the best. So let's go over the answer choices here of why the other ones are wrong. Choice A was talking about administer benzodiazepines. Benzodiazepines, again, this was the correct answer, telling you that any specific tox case, this is our go-to weapon of sedating patients, of controlling their anxiety, of allowing treatment to occur. It's also great because it's anti-seizure medication. Choice B talked about a CT head, not really helpful here. A random CT head in someone with an obvious drug overdose or environmental overdose, not really going to change management here with no history of trauma and no other concerning neurologic symptoms. Choice C was consult toxicology. Consulting toxicology, very important here, but we got a patient here who has dilated pupils, who is agitated, and who is probably a danger to himself and staff members. And we really want him to chillax a little bit so we can do a proper evaluation. That's why consult toxicology is not the immediate thing you need to do. The immediate next step is giving benzodiazepines. And then, of course, reaching out to your toxicologist if you want to. Choice D was give IV haloperidol. We covered this already. Haloperidol, you know, in antipsychotics in general, not the best choice for toxicologic presentations in general, especially severe presentations of combativeness, paranoia, delusions, hallucinations, and, of course, seizures. Benzodiazepines are the answer here. All right, so let's wrap this up. That is really about it in terms of mushroom stuff. There's not much to talk about here. You don't have to know the details of a liver failure. Just know they happen. Know it's a delayed presentation in the vast majority of cases. And that's really it. This was very much a fun guide for you to cover mushroom toxicity. There might be some shroom for improvement. But otherwise, that's all I got. Thanks for listening to Ian Board Bombs. Again, check out Ian Rapid Bombs. Hopefully, Dr. Hussein joins us next week. Hope you enjoyed all the puns. Hope you had a nice, lovely, smiling way to work or home for work. Probably smiling a lot more if you're on your way home from work. From all of us at Ian Board Bombs, we bid thee well and good night. Before I forget, the other indication for paradoxine is isoniazid seizures. All right, that's it.